show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I just am thrilled to be here, and I hope we've got just millions of people out there listening today. We're going through a change here in the studio, and I hope you'll bear with us on it. New settings and a little bit different arrangement than we've normally had. So if we have a little goof up here or there today, why, please bear with us on it. And let us know on the chat room, those of you joining us on the chat room. And by the way, if you're listening at some other venue other than Head On Radio Network, be sure and head on over to the chat room, Head On Radio Network chat room. .com. Be glad to have you in there. Come on in and join the group today. A little light today on the crowd. Don't know what's up with that, but anyway, welcome to the show. We've got a lot to talk about today. We hope you'll join us, and you can do that, you know, by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have you join us here on the program today. Of course, it's a free call. And if you've got minutes to burn on your free, on your phone plan, well, you can call us at 866, well, you can call us at 941-876-6896. I'm going to keep the old cough button handy today. I seem to have a little bit of a ticklish throat. Hope it's not something going around. I know all of you probably have been keeping abreast of a whole lot of news. I thought once the election was over with, we might have, kind of a quiet time. Let's face it, it's not a quiet time. Not quiet at all. What with Barack Obama getting all of his appointments made and all of that, we are very, very busy. And we'll talk about some of his appointments today to be sure. We still don't know about Hillary Clinton. Who was it we just heard about just a little while ago? I'm getting forgetful in my old age. I really am. But been watching the bailout a little bit on TV, the hearings on the bailout, and that was interesting. I don't know how many of you keeping up to speed on that, but it's something we all need to keep a close eye on, I believe. Oh, it was Tom Daschle. This is going to be the Secretary for Health and Human Services. So a good appointment there. Daschle, good guy. I always like Tom Daschle, and I think he'll do a great job there. I think he's a very fine appointment. But today these hearings going on in Washington, D.C. with the big three automakers. I don't know how many of you have been watching those, but I thought that Representative Brad Sherman, I think it was Ackerman. Was it Ackerman or Sherman? I think it's it's Ackerman. All right. Representative Ackerman kind of chastising the guys for showing up with their private jets with their tin cups out. And let's see if we can have a little bit of that on here.
High hat and tuxedo.
Come on, let's have the whole thing here, bud, not just part of it.
There's a delicious irony in seeing private luxury jets flying in to Washington, D.C., and people coming off of them with tin cups in their hand, saying that they're going to be trimming down and streamlining their businesses. It's almost like seeing a guy show up at the soup kitchen in high hat and tuxedo.
Good line. really a good line. Of course, that's not going to faze these guys that are ahead of the big three. You can insult them all you want to, and they'll sit there and take it. Number one, they have to. Secondly, they're going to go back in their private jets tonight back to Detroit or wherever it is they live in grand style. And I don't want to blame the whole thing on them. I'm not sure where all of the blame lies. I guess all of the blame doesn't lie any place with this big three problem we have right now. And to be sure, it is a problem because millions of jobs are at stake. Millions of jobs. And just to cut through some of the crap that's being spread around by various news outlets, in my opinion, it's not just the fault of General Motors or just the fault of United Auto Workers that Toyota and Honda and Subaru are allowed to pay their employees roughly half of what GM employees bring home in pay and benefits. Why shouldn't we be asking, let me put it another way. Why should we be asking GM's employees to give up more than what they already have? And they have given up a lot already. And if you've got to put blame on some of this to someplace for the need for this bailout, blame every single employee of Toyota and Honda and Subaru that's refused to sign a union membership card. That's where a lot of this goes to. Blame the management of Toyota and Honda and Subaru for hiring temporaries that they keep on the payroll oftentimes longer than 2 years at $12 an hour with no benefits. They do that all the time. Blame the politicians that have consistently made it more difficult for workers to organize. Don't blame people that have already sacrificed half their wages and their benefits package for the sake of the company, and a lot of the big three workers have done that. A lot of them have sacrificed a lot and lost their jobs anyway. But it was embarrassing today, I would think, to the big three. They flew into the nation's capital in their private luxurious jets to make their case to the House that the auto industry is running out of cash and they need $25 billion in our money to avoid bankruptcy. The CEOs of Ford and General Motors and Chrysler may have told Congress that they'll likely go out of business without a bailout, yet that hasn't stopped them from traveling in style. General Motors, what's his name, Wagoner? He flew in General Motors' $36 million luxury jet to tell everybody that they're desperate for cash. He could have bought a round-trip ticket, even first class, for $875 from Detroit, but oh, no. They had to spend $20,000 to fly that corporate jet in there. Now, I know. We can't have the General Motors CEO flying in a plane with, oh, dare I say it, with ordinary people? Ooh. Doesn't that just make you sick to just think about it, that the CEO of General Motors might have to fly on a regular airplane and breathe the same air as normal people? Up in first class? I mean, I know some of that air that people back in coach breathe actually makes it up to first class, so he would have to breathe that. Therefore, it probably is prudent for him to fly in the company jet and spend $20,000 to go back and forth rather than less than a grand on first class. Couldn't be seen doing that, of course. I used to work for a company many years ago when I was a young man. That reminds me of something. And you talk about excess. I used to work for a company, and I worked for them for some 10 years when I was a very, very young man. that when the president of the company came to visit, he and the vice president would come. They would come on two separate jets. That's right. They didn't want to let the president and vice president outdo them. So they flew in on two separate jets. This is corporate guys, president and vice president of a company, so that, you know, just in case one plane went down, they wouldn't lose the whole leadership of the company. That's a true story. True story. I don't know. What do you think about this bailout for the auto workers? I'm torn on it. I really am. I was against the first bailout for Wall Street. We hear people now saying, oh, it's working, it's working. I've yet to see one iota of proof that it's worked whatsoever. If you have seen any evidence that it's working, please let me know. I'd like to know in what form this success is coming. I've heard several Republicans saying that legislators that worked for this bailout to get done, saying, yes, it's working. Well, I don't think it is. And I know a lot of people that don't think it is, and I've yet to see one single sign that it is working. So I don't know. I don't know if it is or not, but like I said, I haven't seen any evidence that it is. But what do you think about it? Should we do it? Should we help save the auto industry? I'm not so sure. And I'm not so sure we shouldn't. So, I understand the plight of the people that are involved in Washington trying to decide what to do. And you know what? Knowing Congress the way I do and the way I know you do, they'll probably take it less serious than you and I do. Because after all, it's you and I that have to worry about going to the grocery store and being able to afford groceries. It's you and I that have to worry about our jobs and the jobs of our kids and grandkids and all that. It's you and I that have to worry about that stuff. The legislators don't have to worry about that. So they'll take a vote on it, just like they did the first bailout. And whether you're for it or against it, I thought the first bailout was crazy. And so far, it's proving out to me that it was crazy. Here we've spent almost half of that $740 billion. And we find that the promised accountability for that money just isn't there. We hear Hank Paulson talking now like, we'll save the other half of it for Obama to spend. But very little accountability, very little evidence that that money's going to help the credit industry around the country. The banks that are getting the money are hanging on to it. They're paying higher dividends to their stockholders. They're using the money allegedly for acquisitions of other banks. So I don't see where credit is broken loose at all so far. Just don't see any evidence of it. 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I think they should, but they should have strings attached to it. On both industries, too. Banking and, you know, there should be conditions involved.
They certainly should put some conditions on that they didn't put the first time around with the Wall Street bailout. They didn't have hardly any conditions.
That wasn't a bailout. That was just what we call in New York a ripoff, you know.
Yeah. It appears that it was.
Going out of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it bailout. That's simple transfer of funds out of the country.
I'm afraid you're right. I'm afraid you are.
This is something that has to remain in the present. You know, this Wall Street, in my opinion, was the big payoff to bring Barack Obama in power.
Well, who knows?
I've seen this movie before too many times.
Well, we certainly haven't seen any accountability for that money so far. I'm not pleased about it.
And you're not, trust me.
No, you're right, we're not. I told you to go down there and protest on Wall Street and put a stop to this. And I did, I told you, and you didn't get it stopped.
You know, NYPD has a lot of AK-47s, and they're on to the teeth.
Well, I was counting on you, man. I really was.
Because the stuff I would have to say were probably, you know.
Well, you couldn't have done any worse than that one guy that was standing down there protesting on Wall Street with that said the sign that said "Jump, you effers, jump." I like that sign.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, this is the price. And history repeats itself. You know, this is the same thing. This is the price that had to be paid for the old oligarchy to bring Roosevelt in.
Well, I hope it's nothing like that, but we're going to find out soon. We're going to find out just how beholden anybody is to these fellows down there now.
Okay.
I certainly hope Obama isn't beholden to them. I made the statement that Obama was...
Well, no, he's not going to be, because he's probably going to have free reign.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it seemed like the first 100 days, he's going to go through a lot of massive... legislation. You know, I do have problems with the appointment he made for Chief Justice.
Oh, you mean for the Attorney General's office?
I mean, yeah, the Attorney General, I'm sorry. You know, I do have a problem in his connection with Chiquita Banana Company.
Yes.
But I kind of look at it as what Roosevelt did with Joseph P. Kennedy. You got to put the fox in the hen house, sort of thing.
Well, and the other thing is, and I don't know the answer to this, I'm just throwing it out there to be devil's advocate, what do you do if you find anybody with enough moxie, intelligence, experience, and all that to take care of that situation, to run that office properly? How do you find somebody whose hands are completely clean?
You don't, because anybody who's anybody in Washington has sold their souls years ago. You know, they've been presented up, they've been to the mountaintop, and the devil has said, well, you know, you can have all what is surveyed here.
And
Barack himself.
And we talk about change and all. Is it wise to go outside of Washington and find somebody that is not wise to the ways of Washington, D.C.? Do we find a newbie to go in there? Would he be able to handle it?
No.
I don't know the answer.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So we do have to get one of the foxes to guard the chicken house always.
Yeah.
Hopefully one, not one of the head foxes.
No, but one of them. So, yes, I don't like the business, his association with Chiquita Bananas, but I think he's very competent, and I think... At the end of the day, he's going to tie up a lot of loopholes, just like Joseph P. Kennedy did.
Well, I hope so. And, you're good with your history, because Joe Kennedy was a necessary evil. And maybe I shouldn't call him evil, but he was a rascal, to be sure. And it was good to have one of the foxes in there. Sometimes you can't be a good detective unless you've been one of the thieves.
Well, you know, what Barack Obama is doing, he's going to be the good cop to a whole army of bad cops. And, you know, it's a good policy.
Yeah.
Because, what's his name, is not a nice guy either, the chief of staff.
Right. Oh, Rahm Emanuel? The guy's a shark. He is a shark.
Yeah, but, hey, you know what? He's our shark.
That's right. That's right. Well said. What do you think about this Dick Cheney being indicted thing down in Texas? Anything to it at all?
I hope so. I pray so. You know, I think unfortunately Dick Cheney is going to go alongside a lot of our tin pot dictators like Pinochet. He's going to die peacefully in his sleep. But I want him to die broke.
His indictment will probably end up right alongside of Tom DeLay's someplace. We all know how well that's turned out.
Nudge.
Yeah.
but I say, you know what? We need to put some taxes out there and tax them to death. So, like, when they're in this, this is what we need to do. Tax the rich. That way, when those rich have to come into this country and do business, they have to live like paupers.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's in their world, paupers. For you and me, it's living relatively well off.
Well, are you living relatively well off?
Compared to other people, I think so.
Oh, good.
You know, compared to a lot of people around me, you know, like, lucky enough to have, you know, family and a strong social safety net.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means everything.
Let's say two or three different countries. A lot of people aren't blessed the way I've been. And one of the things I've learned over the past few years is I've counted my blessings of having a strong family, but also that strong family would not have, it's like one hand washes the other. That strong family would not have existed without them paying their fair share of taxes and refurbishing those coffers that right. distributes the money out to the greater good.
Are you on a different phone today?
No.
Oh, okay.
Am I good now?
The quality of our connection is very, very poor today. I mean,
okay, hold on for one second. Let me try moving to another side, though. Hold on.
Okay. This is a live show here. We can.
How's that?
Oh, well, we'll see.
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Now, you sound just like that commercial on TV. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, my, as you know, my family's from Jamaica, and, you know, my family's done well in Jamaica. And, you know, thank God I still. My family's still very tied to the island that we pay our fair share of taxes down there.
Have you been all over Jamaica?
Yes.
I took a cruise one time. Maybe I've told you this.
Mm-hmm.
Took a cruise one time. And of all places that they let us off to tour some of the island, they took us, this was a Carnival cruise, they took us to Ocho Rios.
Ocho Rios, yeah.
Yeah, have you been there?
Oh, yeah. A lot of my relatives live not too far from there.
Well, the dock and all, where they let us off, it wasn't the coolest place that I've ever seen.
That's one of the worst places you can go, actually, and I don't know why they send you there. You know, there's far nicer places. You see, the thing is, like a lot of these islands, you have to know people
yeah.
to really see the splendor and magnificence, and unfortunately, Jamaica's one of them. If you don't have an insider scoop, you know.
Next time I go, I have to take you along, I guess.
Yeah.
I would have learned a lesson that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the neatest place I've ever been.
Not too far from there, you'll find some of the most beautiful landmarks, some of the best whatever.
Mm. Well, I just thought I'd ask. A lot of people never heard of Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and I would rather have seen some other places.
Well, that's a tourist trap. You know, tourists go, spend their money, and leave.
Well,
that's what they're counting.
Here's my advice: if any of you get on a Carnival cruise, and you ever go, there's two places that if you go, stay on the ship. When they say it's time to get off the ship and go tour. If you go to Ocho Rios, stay on the boat. And if you go to Cozumel, Mexico, stay on the boat.
Well, Carnival Cruise as a line is, I don't like Carnival.
Well, they're a big bang for the buck, I guess, is the thing with Carnival.
Yeah, try Norwegian.
Yeah, Norwegian costs a little more. I hear their food's better and all that. Although, you know what I do when I go on a cruise? I like to just sit on the stern in a nice deck chair with someone you love or a friend, just sit there and have a cup of coffee or an iced tea and just enjoy the weather. I love cruising. My oh my, that is. I'd love to go on a cruise every other week if I could afford it. And I live in the right place to do it too. Here in South Florida, you can cruise cheap. Didn't cost you much to go. Hey Kevin, thanks for calling today. I really appreciate hearing from you.
Okay, same here, as always.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, Ocho Rios, Jamaica. Not one of the best places I've ever been. Hey, do you know what this week is? I've got to mention this. If Bob's listening, I know he wishes me well on this today. You see, those of you that aren't big college football fans, there's this guy named Bob Kincaid on the Hedron Radio Network. And Bob is a big West Virginia Mountaineer fan. And his coach last year, as I understand it, born and bred of West Virginia, left West Virginia and took over the coaching job in Michigan. And Bob and all the West Virginians are very unhappy with this guy, you see. And so this week is Michigan week for Ohio State. And we OSU fans and even those people from Michigan, they think this is a big deal every year. We think it's a big deal. We think it's the best rivalry in the country. And so just going to have a little tribute to that, and we'll be right back after this. And this is for the OSU Michigan week. If we get the right thing going here. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Good to have you along with us, as always. Hey, let's head on over to the phone. We got a couple of people waiting here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Jennifer in beautiful Washington State.
Hey, Washington, the beautiful dark blue state.
Actually, the sun is shining today, and we have a little break from the rain, so it's very, very pretty.
Well, that you know, we expect to have a little rain in Washington, but you pulled that state through for us. Boy, they came through in fine style, Washington did, during the election. Wow.
Yes. Well, you know, Eastern Washington is kind of funny, but Western Washington is true blue.
Yeah, well, Eastern Washington's, you're right, it's different. It's different. It's the more rural part of Washington, and who knows?
Well, I'm proud to say I'm in Western Washington, and I voted all Democrat like I always do.
Well, all right, a yellow dog like myself. Yes. Well, what can we do for you today?
Well, I wanted to talk about the Big Three bailout.
Yes, please do. What do you feel? What do you think about it?
Well, I think like you do. Part of me says yes, and part of me says no. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. The part of me that says yes is the part of me that wants to be sure that people in that part of the country have jobs. But the part of me that says no is, to say I'm a little angry would be understating it. I'm very miffed because I know that the technology is there to build automobiles that are biofuels and cars that can get 60 miles to the gallon. And I know that the auto industry had a great deal to do with destroying any hopes of rapid transit throughout the country, and that they had a great deal to do with destroying the market for hemp. I say this. Well, see, one of our biggest problems in this country is urban sprawl.
Oh, yeah.
We have to have cars, and, of course, that means we have to have gasoline at this point in time. So why don't the oil companies bail out the auto industry?
Well, now, there you go. I haven't heard anybody suggest that yet.
I mean, they're making record profits.
That should be a good partnership, shouldn't it?
Yes. I mean, they're very dependent on one another.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got all this money sitting around. They should bail out the auto industry and create jobs for people. And then the auto industry needs to get busy making cars for us like the ones they sell in Europe, which is over 50% of their market, I understand.
Well, and the American automakers, they're making money other places. They're making money in China. Of course, if the American auto industry goes in the tank, I guess the oil companies can depend on the foreign automakers to take up the space and bend, make enough cars to use all the gas that they can pump. I don't know. It's an ugly mess. I know you're not as old as I am, but can you?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm older than you are.
Well, we don't want
to. I'm getting close to 70.
We don't want to get in that kind of a contest. But
I'm older than God.
Well, you might have something to say about that. But, when you were a kid, when you were a teenager or 16, 17, I don't know, in Washington, when you get your driver's license. When I was in Ohio as a kid, you got them when you were 16.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't wait to get out there and drive. And my dad used to drive us up to Detroit, Michigan, once in a while to see a baseball game whenever the Cleveland Indians played up there. And there was a big billboard outside of town that said, you know, better cars are being built, and Buick is building them. Of course, we all have all heard the saying, as General Motors goes, so goes America. Could you ever have envisioned a company like General Motors on the brink of bankruptcy?
Absolutely not.
No.
It's absolutely mind-boggling. But they did it to themselves.
They did.
I really don't have a lot of pity for them. I just pity the workers that are losing their jobs. And these people that are flying around to the tune of 20 grand a trip need their heads slapped in. I mean, come on. How many workers did they lay off for that trip?
Oh, sure.
You know?
Sure.
Give me a break.
Yeah, it's... It's looking like there probably will not be an automobile company bailout. If it does not come, are these guys, are they jerking us around, or are they really going to run out of cash? Are they really going to go bankrupt? Are we really, you know, a lot of people say that's playing chicken here. We are on the precipice of losing millions of jobs, perhaps, and... I don't know. It's an ugly situation. I don't know
See,
where
to part of the problem is people don't have the money to buy new cars now.
No.
And whatever they are manufacturing is not selling. And, I mean, they're practically begging people to buy cars. They should have stopped making SUVs years ago. They should have stopped making these monster trucks years ago and focused on giving us our nice... little 60-mile-per-gallon cars that were sensible, like sensible shoes.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes me crazy. And as far as this other bailout goes, I've got news for you. I'm in a situation right now where I'm having trouble paying my mortgage. And so I was looking for some help with that because I heard there's money available now. And so I thought, well, I will just check around. And somebody told me, go to HUD.com. Don't go to HUD.com. All what happened when I went to HUD.com, I filled out the stupid thing, which doesn't ask for any personal information, but they take your name and phone number and all that stuff. And within minutes after having filled that out online, I got a phone call from the fast-talking guy from Florida. He talks with a New York accent. You get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Who is telling me how they're going to get me a new loan and I can start from scratch again and I won't have to make any payments for 3 months. And it just sounded great. And they'll lower my interest rate, which is astronomical. All I have to do is send them $1,000 in front.
Is that all?
But that's all I have to do. Just send them $1,000 and they'll take care of everything.
Oh, man.
And my mailbox was flooded with stuff like this.
Mm.
Absolutely flooded. And it's not bad enough they do that. But then they say time is very important and they start trying to rush you into committing yourself.
Oh,
so the money's
man.
Out there, but that's where it's going. It's going to these damn four flushers that are preying on idiots like me.
Well, you're not much of an idiot if you didn't go through, you know, go ahead and do it. I mean, think of how many fish they will catch today by doing that.
Well, you know, 10 a day is 10 grand.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's sad. That really is. But of course, if there's a pile of money sitting someplace, There's going to be the, like you said, that's a term I haven't heard in many years. My father liked it, four flusher. they're gonna come out of the weeds, and you know they're gonna find a way to feast off of someone else's troubles. It always happens.
Exactly. Wow. So you know that is where our tax dollars are going. Once again, we find ourselves in a situation where the poor are being exploited by these fast-talking wealthy people.
Yeah. Well, nothing new there, is there?
No, but it just is very disappointing because I really thought that maybe, just maybe, this bailout might help people who really needed the help.
Sure. Well, so far, I haven't seen any evidence, and I've seen several politicians on the Republican side so far say, well, you know, this bailout's working. We see things are loosening up. I haven't seen anything. anything that suggests that.
I do know that my house is for sale, and my real estate agent tells me that people are coming out now to look at homes because money is available. But I don't know if he's actually sold anything. I know he's showing homes.
Well,
I don't see that this is doing any good. I mean, one of my neighbors was foreclosed not too long ago. And I don't live in a fancy neighborhood, and I certainly don't live in a slum. I live in a probably lower middle class neighborhood, very nice neighborhood. It's always been real stable. And our governor has been very good at insulating us from a lot of things that have been really bad, like Michigan and Ohio, you know. We don't have that situation here at this point. So, you know, it's starting here now, too. And I'm one of the victims, and I'm not real happy about it, but...
Well, it's a disease that's spreading. There isn't any question about that. And I don't know about there, and I don't know about the credit issue all over the country, but I do know that in many, many places, and I have done my share of research on this, in many places right now, you better have a score in the high 700s. You better have the capacity to pay back that money and then some, and you better have at least 20% down. And that's a tough order for a lot of people to come up with.
No kidding, with home selling in the $200,000.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
That's right.
How many people have 20 grand sitting around?
It's you better have that good credit, and what do they call it, the three C's? You better have the capacity to pay for it. And you better have plenty of money to put down collateral. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult here. We in Lee County, Florida, we were second in the country last week. We had in this county, which is, you know, this is no New York City. This is no Seattle. This is no Phoenix. This isn't a place that 2,655 foreclosures last month.
Wow. Well, Florida got hit really hard along with California.
And what's difficult is a lot of folks, and realtors have been talking about this, a lot of folks are house hunting to find a bargain. They find a bargain, and by the time the deal gets done, it takes so long for the bank to decide whether or not to go ahead with a short sale or not, 60, 90 days in some cases. The value of the house has fallen, and the people who originally were going to buy it changed their mind, thinking, well, if it's fallen this much in 60 or 90 days, I'm going to wait. And so they back out of the market. And we've got people sitting on the sidelines that would buy if they thought we were somewhere close to the bottom of the market, but I don't know that we are. God, I hate to say
that. I wonder if that's what happened with my house, because I had a buyer. I had an offer, and I had like 3 weeks for it to close, and they backed out.
Could well be. It could well be. I've heard several real estate folks say that is exactly what happens. Banks have been lending institutions are dragging their feet, and in, you know, property values are falling, and people see that the property values, you know, and you're going to need a couple of appraisals, and that further complicates it. You could get by with one not so long ago. They're making it tough. They're making it very, very tough. There's no question about that.
Yep. Well, I don't honestly think that the powers that be really want us in better shape. I think it's like Tom Hartman says, the middle class has got to go. Even after this election, Bush is still working very, very hard to get rid of the middle class.
Oh,
and when the middle class goes, those of us who are below middle class, which I am now, get the brunt of it, really. Really hard.
Always.
So, you know, I think it's all, I'll tell you the truth, I'm very, very leery. I am not expecting the changes that we had hoped for and that we voted for.
I sure hope you're wrong on that.
I hope I am, too.
I hope we get an honest, sincere effort. I do understand that some things maybe a year or so ago before the economy got quite so bad might be difficult, but the basic principles of what he ran on, I hope he makes an honest, sincere effort, and I'm hopeful, and I'm I'm confident that he will. I am.
I don't think he is a dishonest man.
No.
But I'm not sure how much of it is really up to him.
That's right, and it's one thing we all have to remember about possibly having unreal expectations of things. It's going to take a long time. I saw a survey last night on CNBC, which said that I believe it was 44% of the people in this poll expected the recession to last from 3 to 5 years. And I thought, wow, the American public is feeling that bad about this economy. 3 to 5 years, that was 44%. And the other ones were...
There are economists saying that it will get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that has to happen. I mean, look at all the jobs that are being lost on a regular basis. 53,000 from Citibank alone.
Gosh, you know, when I heard that, I thought, my God, where did they have 53,000 people at? Really?
Well, I think they're worldwide.
Yeah, they are.
And I think they're laying off worldwide.
Yes. I think it's
just here.
In Britain, they're losing
some. But, you know, the way the economies are set up now, we're so interwoven that what's happening everywhere affects everywhere else, and we're just screwed.
I know. Well, enjoy it. we'll come out of this sooner or later, and keep a smile on your face.
I will do.
And call us again soon. Let us know how you're doing.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It is easy to get all caught up, isn't it? You look at the doom and gloom all day long, every day on the markets and so forth. I see the markets down nearly 400 points as we speak. A lot of people losing more money on their 401ks and all that. Difficult time. Very difficult time. Well, we're going to pause for another break here just for a second, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
that song puts me in a good mood. And I am in a good mood today. Somebody asked me earlier today why I was in such a good mood, and I said, well, you know, because yesterday was kind of a bad day. And I said, well, you know, when you get hit on the base in the head with a baseball bat 10 times yesterday, and today only 7 or 8, it's a better day. Oh, that's how I feel today. How are you doing? Huh? Are you facing anything like our last caller? Are you safe with your home? Are you safe with your job? Is everything hunky-dory with you? Do you have any financial problems? Are you keeping up with all your bills? Are you in a lot of debt? Do you sleep well at night? I know a lot of people that are having a tough time of it right now, a very, very tough time. And I don't know why I seem to know so many. It seems as though the community here where we live, which has been a very, I don't want to say wealthy community, although part of it is extremely, extreme wealth to the unimaginable extreme. In Fort Myers and Sanibel and Captiva Island and Naples, Florida, as you might expect, all in this area, many billionaires' homes in the $30, $40 million range and all that. So there's untold wealth. But there's also the majority of people are just average people, and they're suffering. And these 2,655 foreclosures last month didn't come from those wealthy folks. They came from folks like you and I. And it's troublesome to see it. And there are a lot of people around the country that don't completely understand the problem because where they live, just like our last caller, where they live hasn't quite been infected with this yet, or troubled with it yet, call it what you will. But it is a disease that's spreading throughout the country, and that's what I'm afraid of with this auto industry, if something isn't done. And we chuck another million jobs or so, we could be facing a catastrophic economic condition here in this country, as if it isn't bad enough already. A lot of people don't understand. They see now we don't have soup kitchens. We don't have people selling apples on the corners yet. The difference between what happened in 1929, starting in 1929, and what it is now, back then people just lost everything they had. Today, the market being what it is and all, so many people are losing the pensions that they've worked for all their lives. They may not be losing their car or their house or their material possessions, but they're losing their retirement, what they've worked for all these years, what they bargained for in good faith with the companies that they worked for, and that money's been invested, and the people are losing their retirement. Many, many people of retirement age are having to keep working. And yes, I know we're living older and living a bit healthier now than in years gone by. And people can work a little longer now than when we used to. But there comes a time when there can only be so many people carrying out groceries at the grocery stores or finding the carts in the parking lot at Walmart. It's just I know I keep using the word, but it's ugly. It's very, very ugly, and it troubles me greatly, and I know a lot of people. I see the market is down 400 points at the moment. Another good day on Wall Street. That takes it down to, well, not it won't close under 8,000 at that point. Of course, we still have got 3.5 minutes to go, and who knows when on the market these days what can happen in 3.5 minutes. We got a lot to talk about in the second half. I want to get all historical on you in the second half today and still have a word or two about Holy Joe Lieberman that I want to be sure and mention. But we want to do a couple of historical things in the second half of the program today, so I hope you'll stick with us on that. What do you think about Joe Lieberman right now? So someone planted a seed in my mind after they heard what I was saying yesterday about Joe. And I'm still not happy about the Democrats allowing him to keep his chairmanship of the Homeland Security, but on further review, and it's another way to look at it, doesn't Obama have Lieberman cornered now? Would Lieberman dare vote against any of Obama's appointments that Obama puts up? Would he dare go on Fox News and ruffle any Democratic feathers without looking like a complete ass? Which he is, anyway. Can he go against anything that Obama wants without looking like a complete ass? Maybe Obama will count on Joe to go over to the Republican side and pick up a couple of votes when they're really needed. Maybe to break a filibuster or whatever. Maybe Barack owns Joe Lieberman now. I think that's a gamble that Barack has made. And maybe, just maybe, maybe he's smarter than I thought. He might be a great poker player, and he might have played his hand just right. Time will tell on this. I've always thought he's pretty damn smart, but maybe he's smarter than I thought. That's going to be interesting to see if he owns Holy Joe now. What do you think? Give us a call after the break, 866-546-5254. Do wait till after the break. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this whole deal with Joe Lieberman. Maybe it was the smart thing to do. Maybe he's got Lieberman hanging on a string now, and Lieberman's going to be a good little boy and do whatever he's told. That would be good. That would be good. Only Barack knows that, and only Lieberman knows that. I wonder if there's been contact back and forth. It just sounded to me like Lieberman was a bit contrite. I don't know. I don't trust the guy. I never will trust the guy. I don't like him. I've never liked him. I never will like him. But maybe, just maybe, Barack Obama has played his hand well here. We're going to find out. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news. Don't go away.
Listening to Win Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Without question, in our mind, it is dire, it is critical, it is a crisis.
UAW President Ron Gettelfinger. Gettelfinger says at GM alone, 47,000 UAW members have lost their jobs since 2005. He says a $25 billion federal bridge loan is needed to keep U.S. auto companies and the 13 million jobs that depend upon them in business. UAW, Gettelfinger says, has done its part by making huge concessions, saving the auto companies billions of dollars. Just 10% of the cost of a new vehicle goes to pay for UAW labor, and Gettelfinger says union workers earn every penny.
The men and women of the UAW are proud to go to work and receive a fair day's wage in exchange for a fair day's work, and that's what they do.
GM CEO Rick Wagoner says neither mismanagement nor labor costs threaten GM's survival. He says what exposes GM to failure now is the global financial crisis, and he says that $25 billion federal bridge loan is needed to get through that crisis. New York's governor is taxing tuition to help close that state's multi-billion dollar budget gap. Jesse Russell reports.
One solution Governor David Patterson has proposed for fixing New York's budget shortfall is raising tuition for SUNY and CUNY students. Not all of the increase will be reinvested in higher education, but instead will be used to generate revenue for general spending. The Fiscal Policy Institute's James Parrott says the tuition increase is essentially a tax on students.
Tuition, as you normally think of it, where it goes to the university, it's not being used for that. It's being used in lieu of progressive income tax increases.
Parrott said Patterson needs to put the option of progressive tax increases back on the table. According to Parrott, such increases were successfully used in 2003 to tackle the last major budget shortfall. Parrott says that in order to convince public sector unions that contracts should be reopened, Patterson needs to show a commitment to a multifaceted approach.
I can't imagine that public sector unions are going to lend themselves to a partial solution when the governor has arbitrarily taken, you know, a major solution that's proven to have been successful in recent years, and he says he's not going to do that.
Here is today's economic report. With prices dropping like a rock, sales of new homes in Southern California rose like a rocket. Home sales were up 67% over a year ago, as prices were down by 32.6%. That's a 2.8% drop since September of this year. Six counties make up Southern California, and 21,532 homes were sold in that region during October. That's the highest number of homes moved all year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for joining us here this afternoon. We're going to devote most of the second hour today to a few historical things, and we'll get to that in just a minute or so. We were talking a moment ago about the difference between now and 1929. I ran across an old quote. Back in 1929, they asked Al Capone why he wasn't investing in the stock market, and he said it's a racket. When a mafioso calls something a racket, it usually is, and sadly, that quote's just as true today, thanks to this bipartisan deregulation of the financial markets. And really, the effects of the current crash, however, are not going to be felt the same way, like I mentioned, as the 1929 crash. Instead of being asked to dish out non-existent cash to pay for stock bought on a margin, like they did back then, average Americans are watching their retirement plans shrinking into practically nothing. And it's leaving a lot of people in a very, very, very bad place, a very bad place indeed. We were talking yesterday about what happened to the Republican Party. How could they have sunk so low? And I ran across this little piece, What Happened to the Republicans, quoting Abraham Lincoln. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Quoting Theodore Roosevelt, "When all is said and done, the rule of brotherhood remains as the indispensable prerequisite to success in the kind of national life for which we strive. Our aim is to recognize what Lincoln pointed out, the fact that there are some respects in which men are obviously not equal, but also to insist that there should be an equality before the law, and at least an approximate equality in the conditions under which each man obtains the chance to show the stuff that is in him when compared to his fellows." Moving on, quoting Warren Harding, "We drew to a pair of deuces and filled," to quote the great Warren Harding. And to quote Ronald Reagan, "Facts are stupid things." And moving on in the Republican group here, George W. Bush, "You're working hard to put food on your family." So I guess we can see an obvious erosion in intellect in the Republican Party. It just happened oh so slowly, but it finally has gotten to the point where they're going to have to come up with something different. That's all there is. That's all there is to it. What needs to be done right now with this new Barack Obama administration is going to take the oath on the 20th of January. And by the way, we are going to be there. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a nightmare in some respects from all that I'm hearing now. But anyway, we are looking forward to it. I hope the logistics work out right. I'm hearing a lot of horror stories in the making. They're going to have jumbotrons put up everywhere. I heard last night if all the people show up that they expect to show up, there'd be approximately 1 square foot for everybody to stand in. Transportation's going to be nearly impossible. We'll see. We'll see what the people in Washington... I guess if the people in Washington don't know how to handle a crowd, then nobody does. I'll tell you one thing. I realize it's just a little bit over 100,000 people on home football game Saturdays, but... See, they gave me another excuse to bring up Michigan week, Ohio State and Michigan. Another excuse. You go to one of the Ohio State football games and 105,000 people or so watching the game, there isn't any problem at all with traffic or congestion. Of course, you figure 30 to 40 times that many people in Washington, D.C. But there are a lot of places in the country where they know how to handle a big crowd, and I probably figure nobody knows how to handle a bigger crowd any better than anybody in the people in Washington, D.C. We shall see. But there's a lot the Obama administration needs to get done. They need to open up the books, for one thing. They need to open up this vault of secrecy that's been kept throughout this last 8 years of the Bush administration, and not just about revelations about surveillance either. We need to see Cheney's energy group notes. Would not love to see those. We need some aggressive work with the 9/11 truth movement. We need some transparency with this bailout. God, do we ever. Justice. We need some justice. The Bush administration is a criminal regime. And when you stop and look at it, what Paulson's doing is an insult to everybody. Pretty much all the folks got to be relentlessly investigated and pursued, and in many cases prosecuted and punished, and then amends have to be made. And then there's this trickle-down. You know, if we're not convinced that trickle-down is some sort of a cruel scam, you wait another month or two. You want to support the middle class? We need government money for public works, for peace and justice, not for rich gangsters. Shelter the homeless, feed the hungry, care for the sick, employ the poor. There's a lot that can be done, but this first half of this bailout money was wasted. Absolutely wasted. And another thing I think we need to do, I think we need to do some demilitarization. I'm suggesting that we ought to separate the industrial complex from the military complex. Bring the military bucks back to the military. And then reduce it by half. We don't need any more Blackwaters. We don't need any KBRs. Screw Raytheon and Halliburton and people like that. There's a lot that can be done. I hope that the establishment in Washington doesn't have too rock solid to hold on anything to keep some of this progress from being done. Dick Cheney, been indicted along with Alberto Gonzalez, Cheney, for investing $85 million in a, I don't know, a penitentiary company where there's been inhumane treatment. He's been indicted. Will he ever have to answer this indictment? Would he, Alberto Gonzalez, ever have to stand trial for anything? Wouldn't I love that? Wouldn't most of you love that? Let's hear from the local TV station down in Texas. Well, that doesn't sound like a local TV station down in Texas. Here we go.
Tonight, team coverage on indictments out of Willacy County, one of them filed against Vice President Dick Cheney.
News Channel 5 Stephanie Stone is live at the Willacy County Courthouse. She has lots of political names, as she says, that are on those indictments.
Rita Garcia spoke to an indicted state district judge's attorney.
And Becky Medellin found out how the people who live in Willacy County see their district attorney tonight. And just minutes before news time, News Channel 5 obtained copies of all of today's indictments.
For the very latest, we now go live to our Stephanie Stone at the Willacy County Courthouse. Stephanie, what charges is the vice president facing tonight?
The vice president is now accused of engaging in organized criminal activity. Now, the jury asked that all the people named in the indictments be summoned to court. So that means the vice president will not be arrested. We spoke with the vice president's press secretary earlier today. She tells News Channel 5 that she had never heard of an indictment from Willacy County, nor had she heard of Willacy County. The vice president had not been given a court date. Cheney, former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, State Senator Eddie Lucio Jr., Judge Migdalia Lopez, Judge Janet Leal, and Willacy County District Clerk Gilberto Lozano are some of the public officials named. Guetta recently told News Channel 5 he was investigating corruption within the private prison system following an inmate's death. According to Cheney's indictment, the vice president is specifically accused of investing some $85 million in the private Vanguard Group, which houses federal inmates. The grand jury accuses Cheney and Alberto Gonzalez of engaging in organized criminal activity. The local district clerk was also indicted. Here's what he has to say about the accusations.
You know, I thought about it, but I believe that the only conflict would be if I was to not follow the regular procedures. And right now, I'm following the regular procedures as far as indictments as I would any other case. And as far as, you know, removal or anything like that, it would have to be after a conviction or a civil case or removal.
So there you have the story coming from the great state of Texas. Speaking of Texas, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. How about that? I didn't know you were talking about Texas, but I guess I'll have to listen to that later. This is Mike, your friend down from Texas.
Hi, Mike.
First of all, congratulations on Obama's win. Y'all won, and we'll see. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. At least I will. And let's see what happens. It's time to put up or shut up, and I know you would agree with that.
I do.
What prompted me to call is I was listening to the podcast from yesterday, and you were talking a lot about the auto workers, and I would agree with you. I don't think it's the union's fault. However, the union is sitting on $35 billion in cash. And I was listening. I'm not going to take credit for this idea because it was Robbie Batra's. I was listening to Hartman's podcast, and he brought up the fact, why couldn't the union take some of that $35 billion that they're sitting on? GM stock's a pretty good deal right now at $2 or $3 a share. They could buy 50-60% of the shares, and the union can control the company.
Yeah, wouldn't that be an interesting situation?
You know, and give the shareholders, let them have their shareholders meeting and appoint new boards, and they can run it the way they want to. And the union has plenty of cash to do that. Because all they're asking for is $25 billion for all three automakers, is that not right?
An infusion of cash of that much, not to buy them, of course.
Right. But, I mean, if the union's got that much cash sitting there, and they believe in the product, and they believe in their workers, it seems like to me it'd be a win-win for everyone. And I wish that would get a little bit more play, because I would not have even thought about it. Because, I mean, to me it seems like it'd be a good use of union money.
I hadn't thought about it. It seems reasonable to me.
It seems like an excellent deal. and then let them go in and they can renegotiate their own agreements because they're negotiating with themselves. Okay, what do we want to do? And, you know, because they could appoint their own CEO or their own board, and then their new board picks their new CEO, and they rock and roll, and hopefully it'd be a win-win.
It'd make for an interesting negotiation experiment of contracts deal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it sure would. So, you know, we can sit here, and I know me and you don't agree on a lot on the political things, but where we agree, I'll support our president, and where we don't disagree, I'll fight like a dog, just like I always have. It doesn't mean that we give up our political battles, but you know, I hope Barack does a good job, and I hope that I hope we can accomplish a lot and straighten some of this mess out. You're not going to get any argument from me on AIG and all that stuff, none at all. But at the same time, I don't think we should be bailing out the auto workers either. We shouldn't have bailed the other side out either. I mean, they are socializing all the losses. There's no question about it, and I don't like it, not one bit. They should let those companies that did that, you know, but supposedly they're smarter than we are. That's why they're doing it, I guess. But,
well, supposedly. That's why they got their bags, you know, bags full of money, and we don't. I guess that is the proof in the pudding, as a lot of people like to say. That you know, I've got to dig into this about the unions and their money and that preposition you put forth there. That's interesting to me.
I'll listen to the podcast tonight and listen to what the story was in Texas, and maybe it'll give me another reason to prompt a call.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you.
All right, bye-bye, guy.
Interesting. I didn't know, and I should have known, I didn't know the union had that kind of cash on hand. Do they? $35 billion? It's a lot. We played this piece about Dick Cheney being indicted, him and, our former Attorney General, Alberto, and Texans both. Well, Cheney's typically not, he's not a Texan really, is he's from Wyoming. I think he's got a residence in Texas. He's lived in Texas. Who knows where Cheney really lives. But since we're talking about a vice president that may have to resign before the 20th, who knows? I wish he would have resigned a long time ago. You all know how I feel about the man. I've been doing a lot lately listening to speeches by famous people. And this is one that I found very interesting, and maybe you haven't heard for a long time, but speaking of corrupt politicians.
Good evening. This is the 37th time I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shaped the history of this nation. Each time I have done so to discuss with you some matter that I believe affected the national interest. In all the decisions I have made in my public life, I have always tried to do what was best for the nation. Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. In the past few days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress to justify continuing that effort. As long as there was such a base, I felt strongly that it was necessary to see the constitutional process through to its conclusion. That to do otherwise would be unfaithful to the spirit of that deliberately difficult process, and a dangerously destabilizing precedent for the future. But with the disappearance of that base, I now believe that the constitutional purpose has been served, and there is no longer a need for the process to be prolonged. I would have preferred to carry through to the finish, whatever the personal agony it would have involved. And my family unanimously urged me to do so. But the interests of the nation must always come before any personal considerations. From the discussions I have had with congressional and other leaders, I have concluded that because of the Watergate matter, I might not have the support of the Congress that I would consider necessary to back the very difficult decisions and carry out the duties of this office in the way the interests of the nation will require. I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first. America needs a full-time president and a full-time Congress, particularly at this time with problems we face at home and abroad. To continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the president and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office. As I recall the high hopes for America with which we began this second term, I feel a great sadness that I will not be here in this office working on your behalf to achieve those hopes in the next 2.5 years. But in turning over direction of the government to Vice President Ford, I know, as I told the nation when I nominated him for that office 10 months ago, that the leadership of America will be in good hands. In passing this office to the Vice President, I also do so with a profound sense of the weight of responsibility that will fall on his shoulders tomorrow, and therefore of the understanding, the patience, the cooperation he will need from all Americans. As he assumes that responsibility, he will deserve the help and the support of all of us. As we look to the future, the first essential is to begin healing the wounds of this nation, to put the bitterness and divisions of the recent past behind us, and to rediscover those shared ideals that lie at the heart of our strength and unity as a great and as a free people. By taking this action, I hope that I will have hastened the start of that process of healing which is so desperately needed in America. I regret deeply any injuries that may have been done in the course of the events that led to this decision. I would say only that if some of my judgments were wrong, and some were wrong, they were made in what I believed at the time to be the best interest of the nation. To those who have stood with me during these past difficult months, to my family, my friends, the many others who joined in supporting my cause because they believed it was right, I will be eternally grateful for your support. And to those who have not felt able to give me your support, let me say, I leave with no bitterness toward those will oppose me, because all of us in the final analysis have been concerned with the good of the country, however our judgments might differ. So let us all now join together in affirming that common commitment and in helping our new president succeed for the benefit of all Americans. I shall leave this office with regret at not completing my term, but with gratitude for the privilege of serving as your president for the past 5.5 years. These years have been a momentous time in the history of our nation and the world. They have been a time of achievement in which we can all be proud achievements that represent the shared efforts of the administration, the Congress, and the people. But the challenges ahead are equally great, and they too will require the support and the efforts of the Congress and the people working in cooperation with the new administration. We have ended America's longest war, but in the work of securing a lasting peace in the world, the goals ahead are even more far-reaching and more difficult. We must complete a structure of peace so that it will be said of this generation, our generation of Americans, by the people of all nations, not only that we ended one war, but that we prevented future wars. We have unlocked the doors that for a quarter of a century stood between the United States and the People's Republic of China. We must now ensure that the one quarter of the world's people who live in the People's Republic of China will be and remain not our enemies, but our friends. In the Middle East, 100 million people in the Arab countries, many of whom have considered us their enemy for nearly 20 years, now look on us as their friends. We must continue to build on that friendship so that peace can settle at last over the Middle East, and so that the cradle of civilization will not become its grave. Together with the Soviet Union, we have made the crucial breakthroughs that have begun the process of limiting nuclear arms. But we must set as our goal not just limiting, but reducing and finally destroying these terrible weapons so that they cannot destroy civilization, and so that the threat of nuclear war will no longer hang over the world and the people.
Stay far away from the door if there's a chance of it opening up. They hear a voice in the hall outside and hope that it just passes by. Some people live with the fear of a touch and the anger of having been a fool. They will not listen to anyone, so nobody tells them a lie. I know you're only protecting yourself. I know you're thinking of somebody else. Someone who hurt you, but I'm not above making up for the love you've been denying you could ever feel. I'm not above doing anything to restore your faith if I can. Some people see through the eyes of the old before they ever get a look at the young. I'm only willing to hear you cry because I am an
I know you don't wanna hear what I say. I know you're gonna can survive. I can keep you alive. I'm not above going through it again. I'm not above being cool for a while. If you're cruel to me, I understand. Some people run from a possible fight. Some people...
Ah, yes, I am an innocent man. That's what Tricky Dick was saying back then, you know. He never did really fess up and say, hey, I'm a dirty politician and I did a lot of really bad things. Bad things. You know, it's too bad. When you look at some of the politicians and their tenure in office, Nixon's a prime example. There's a guy right there who politically was very effective. Never a likable character, to be sure. I don't know of anybody that ever really liked Richard Nixon. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that they liked him personally. But politically, he was very effective, and he got some good things done. But the overwhelming filth and corruption inside of that administration did him in, ultimately. I think it was inevitable that it would, once the truth came out. I've said, and I continue to believe, after all these years, that if Dick Nixon would have come before the American public right after Watergate broke and said, hey, look, politics is a dirty game, and we were pulling some dirty stuff here, and we got caught, and... guys like G. Gordon Liddy would have taken the rap for him and all that. I think he could have gotten out of the whole mess. I really do. I've always believed that. If he'd have come out and just squared up with the American public, got it over and done with, I think he could have withstood it. Maybe I'm wrong, but kind of think that's the way it would have been. I do. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program today. We heard rumblings yesterday, I did anyway, I don't know, I'm sure many of you heard it, that Joe Biden was going to hold off on resigning because the new governor in Delaware could be in and he could appoint who he wanted to. Anyway, the talk was that Joe Biden's son, Beau, was the one that he wanted to get appointed, and then he could run for the seat in 2010 in the 2010 special election. I have heard this afternoon that that is not true at all, that Beau Biden said he is not interested in doing that. I haven't seen a quote from Beau Biden, who, by the way, was definitely one of my favorite speakers at the Democratic convention in Denver. My, what a magnificent and inspirational talk he gave that night, and you could feel the love and admiration that he felt for his father. Beau Biden, a wonderful appearance at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. It's a moment I'll not soon forget. In fact, when I came home from there, I said one of the two or three best moments was when he spoke. I was very, very moved. But anyway, it sounds as if, and I have not heard a direct quote from Beau Biden, but it sounds as if maybe that story is just a conjecture on somebody's part and doesn't have a whole lot of meat to it. I said I was going to get all historical with you this second hour of the program today, and we heard a real downer there from Tricky Dick Nixon. And let's hear something uplifting, something maybe a lot of you haven't heard in a good many years. I consider it the greatest speech I ever heard, and I know some of you do as well.
Vice President Johnson, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chief Justice, President Eisenhower, Vice President Nixon, President Truman, Reverend clergy, fellow citizens. We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change.
For I have sworn before you and Almighty God, the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now, for man holds in his mortal hand the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. This much we pledge and more. To those old allies whose cultural and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do. For we dare not meet a powerful challenge at odds and split asunder. To those new states whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonial control shall not have passed away merely to be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall not always expect to find them supporting our view, but we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom, and to remember that in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside. To those people in the huts and villages of half the globe, struggling to break the bonds of mass misery, we pledge our best efforts to help them help themselves. For whatever period is required, not because the communists may be doing it, not because we seek their votes, but because it is right. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. To our sister republics south of our border, we offer a special pledge to convert our good words into good deeds, in a new alliance for progress, to assist free men and free governments in casting off the chains of poverty. But this peaceful revolution of hope cannot become the prey of hostile powers. Let all our neighbors know that we shall join with them to oppose aggression or subversion anywhere in the Americas. And let every other power know that this hemisphere intends to remain the master of its own house. To that world assembly of sovereign states, the United Nations, our last best hope, in an age where the instruments of war have far outpaced the instruments of peace, we renew our pledge of support to prevent it from becoming merely a forum for invective, to strengthen its shield of the new and the weak, and to enlarge the area in which its writ may run. Finally, to those nations who would make themselves our adversary, we offer not a pledge, but a request that both sides begin anew the quest for peace. Before the dark powers of destruction, unleashed by science, engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. We dare not tempt them with weakness, for only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt can we be certain beyond doubt that they will never be employed. But neither can two great and powerful groups of nations take comfort from our present course, both sides overburdened by the cost of modern weapons, both rightly alarmed by the steady spread of the deadly atom, yet both racing to alter that uncertain balance of terror that stays the hand of mankind's final war. So let us begin anew, remembering on both sides that civility is not a sign of weakness, and sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. Let both sides explore what problems unite us, instead of belaboring those problems which divide us. Let both sides, for the first time, formulate serious and precise proposals for the inspection and control of arms, and bring the absolute power to destroy other nations under the absolute control of all nations. Let both sides seek to invoke the wonders of science instead of its terrors. Together, let us explore the stars, conquer the desert, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depth, and encourage the arts and commerce. Let both sides unite to heed, in all corners of the earth, the command of Isaiah to undo the heavy burden and let the oppressed go free. And if a beachhead of cooperation may push back the jungle of suspicion, let both sides join in creating a new endeavor, not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just and the weak secure and the peace preserved. All this will not be finished in the first 100 days. Nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin. In your hands, my fellow citizens, more than mine, will rest the final success or failure of our cause. Since this country was founded, each generation of Americans has been summoned to give testimony to its national loyalty. The graves of young Americans who answered the call to service surround the globe. Now the trumpet summons us again, not as a call to bear arms, though arms we need, not as a call to battle, though in battle we are, but a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. Can we forge against these enemies a grand and global alliance, north and south, east and west, that can assure a more fruitful life for all mankind? Will you join in that historic effort? In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man. Finally, whether you are citizens of America or citizens of the world, ask of us here the same high standards of strength and sacrifice which we ask of you. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.
The unforgettable, immortal words of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Inauguration Day, so many years ago, a day that so many of us watched so happy, so proud, so elated that this man was elected president, so full of hope and vision for what he brought, so ready for a new day in America. Ended in tragedy. Not so long after that. But that speech, in my opinion, is the greatest speech I've ever heard. And when you get a transcript of it, and I would urge you to do this. I mean, you can Google it. You can find the transcript of it in very many places on the net. Go over that speech line by line by line. And you're going to find that it's more than just words. It was put together in such a meaningful way. There was strength, great strength of a nation projected in that speech. A warning, if you will. A peaceful warning to other countries, don't tread on me. Made it clear to our enemies that we would pay any price, bear any burden. Made it very clear to our nemesis at the time. And yet there was compassion. And there was statesmanship in that speech as well. On the one hand, don't mess with us. We've got a powerful military. We will take care of ourselves. We will fight back against any of you try and cause trouble for us. And on the other hand, we'll talk to you. We will talk to you. If there's a problem, diplomacy is there. And we'll use it. Talked about freedom. He talked about peace. He talked about so many things in such a wonderful way in that speech. Again, in my opinion, the greatest speech that's ever been made on American soil. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I've never heard anything better, ever. I do look forward to January the 20th of this year. We may yet again hear another great speech from somebody that I think is going to be a great leader. And I hope not all of you get caught up. And I find myself already one or two of the appointments that Obama's talked about and this and that saying, boy, I don't know. I don't pretend to be as intelligent as Barack Obama. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on everything. I guess we all like to moan and complain, and we've done our share of it, and rightly so, over the last 8 years. But now's the time maybe just to put all that aside and say, hey, we're going to give this man a chance. We're going to give all of his appointments a chance until they prove otherwise. I've heard from so many corners people saying, well, you know, he's bringing some Clinton people in. If they're winners, bring them in. It's not necessarily the people involved that represent the change. It's the ideas that Barack Obama puts forth and puts to these people, whether they've worked in a past administration or not. That doesn't really make a lot of difference. They will be there to work with him and do his bidding and advance his ideas for America. To be sure, they'll be getting their 2 cents worth in as well. But everybody that gets appointed by Barack Obama deserves the chance to prove whether they're up to the job and to prove whether or not he really means it with change. And I believe he does, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on every single one of his appointments, on every single one of his decisions, and hope that it works out for this country. Hope that it works out very, very well. And I have confidence that it will. And Powerpuff just put on the chat room, Tom Daschle to Health and Human Services, you bet. You bet. Excellent. Excellent man for the job. I've always liked Tom Daschle. I think he will do a great job. He's a man of tremendous ethics. And I think he's the right man for the job. And so far, you know, we're talking about some powerful people that he's appointing to these jobs. So let's sit back. Let's wait and see if a few months into this new administration, we see it's the same old, then we'll raise our voices loud and long. And rightly so. Doesn't make any difference that Barack is a Democrat, that he's a liberal Democrat, a progressive Democrat. It doesn't make any difference. We need to give him a chance. We gave George Bush a chance. I did. I know most of you did. I wasn't happy that he won the presidency, just as the Republicans aren't happy that Barack Obama won it. But he was the president. And we wanted to see what he could do. And it didn't take him long to prove that he could not do the job. But those are days gone by, and we can only hope for something better. I wonder how many of you, like me, have got a huge reserve of books at home. I do. As you know, we have a lot of authors. I haven't done so much lately because of the election and so forth. But we have a lot of authors on the program, and the publishers send out a lot of books, and we've got a huge library of books here. And I decided to, you know, you get too many. And so I'm going through my bookcases, and anything that has the word Bush on it, I'm getting rid of. I don't want to forget the Bush administration. I'll never forget the Bush administration, but now it's old news in most respects. Yes, I do hope some of them are brought to justice. But the Bush days are over. And so I'm looking at one here, Bush Must Go, How Bush Rules, Al Franken books, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, and many, many books that's got Bush's name plastered all over it, and I'm going to get rid of every single one of them because it is old news, and we're looking for a new day now. We're looking for a new administration, and Bush can just go fly a kite, go back to Texas, him and Sarah Palin and a couple of people I hope I'd never hear from again. I do see where she's under some sort of another ethics investigation in Alaska for using her office for political purposes. Somebody's suing for that or asking that she be investigated for that. But go away, Sarah Palin. Go away. And go away, George Bush. Maybe he'll go retire to all that land they bought down in, where is it, Paraguay? I hope so. And yes, Powerpuff, I'm not going to forget the Bush administration. I just want them wiped out of here, so I don't have to look at that name every day. We'll fill the bookshelves up with the, not that they won't still be full. They will. You know how it is. You fill up your bookshelves and then you got some stacked here and some stacked there. Yeah. I don't think the library's going to want 50, 60 books about George Bush, do you think? I don't think so. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the program today. We appreciate your listenership so very, very much. And we count on you being there for us here on the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to the Guy James Show, Billy Shears, music director. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. You betcha.